to him a girl, a smart ass maid with one leg, and a priest. Do you see where this is leading? Thaddeus could only move his eyes, but I could tell he was trying his damnedest to shoot a dirty look in my direction. I hope you're listening to this, he called. Barry snapped his fingers. There was a grisly sound akin to a man pulling his boots out of thick quagmire, and Thaddeus crumpled to the ground, oozing black slime from the ragged stumps of his shoulders. His arms followed a moment later, adding insult to injury by slapping him on the back of the head as they landed. Barry descended and savagely stamped on the back of Thaddeus's unmoving skull. "You're listening now, aren't you, you sanctimonious prick? This isn't something you can just ignore anymore. Simon hates you and all your repulsive little friends." The devotees hadn't echoed his last use of Simon. Benjamin and the other non-murderous members of the cult were watching with terrified eyes and their hands covering their mouths. Noticing this, Barry wiped the sweat off his brow with his sleeves and counted 10 deep breaths. Then he knelt beside Thaddeus and spoke to him calmly. "What were the words you used to describe me? An aberration in God's perfect vision for the world? It's ironic that you would say that, because that's pretty much exactly what you are, and God himself told me so. Do you see?"
"Barry," boomed a voice.
All heads turned to Baron Sivius, who took a step forward and flung back his hood.
"Cease your bullying."
Barry floated back up to his previous position. "What is it now? Can't I get through a single item without being interrupted?"
"Your power is indeed great," said Sivius. "Perhaps you would prefer to challenge one who can match it."
The Baron extended his arms towards the ground, palms flat. Black and red energy crackled between his fingers, and he began to levitate. An aura of black fog surrounded him, dotted with black sigils and the faces of agonized souls. A grim chorus of hellish wails drifted across the city. "Took him ages to get the wails right," whispered Mrs. Sivius to Merrill and me. "Used to sound like a bunch of cats with their tails trapped in drawers." He ascended until he had matched Barry's altitude. The two auras, one black, one white, extended tendrils into each other, teasing and testing. The glow from Sivius's eyes intensified until they burned like the red fires of a dying sun. When he spoke, his voice hissed like the wind that whistles through the branches of a dead tree right outside your window on the night your girlfriend broke up with you.
"I am Baron Sivius of the Malevolans," he boomed. The sky was clouding over rather quickly. "All the suffocating powers of darkness are willing slaves to—"
"Will you stop prattling?" Barry extended a hand, and a horizontal cylinder of white light, about 10 feet wide, burst across the square. The wailing of tortured souls became a little bit more desperate before fading altogether under an angelic chorus. Where Sivius had been, there was now nothing but a spreading cloud of black smoke and a sprinkling of red grit upon the floor.
"Winchester!"
cried Mrs. Sivius, running out. She prepared a purple-black ball of dark magic between her hands as she ran, but she was atomized by yet another musical blast of holiness before she could release it.
"Anyone else?"
yelled Barry. The plaza was silent. He sighed with irritation and dusted his hands with a sound like a church organ being slapped. Right then, item one, I declare myself absolute ruler of Lowlead. Item two, get some reliable men around the churches in case Sivius shows up again, assuming he's even allowed to set foot in one. Item three, someone round up those three undead freaks. By then, I was already running for the perimeter. A tall, syndrome-afflicted barbarian blocked my path, gripping the shaft of a warhammer menacingly. But I didn't even slow down. I fell to my knees before him, slid between his massive legs, smoothly got back on my feet, and ran without a backward glance. Somewhere behind me, I thought I heard Merrill call out my name. I clamped my hands around my ears and kept running. The city had been occupied for barely 2 days, but life for the general public was almost back to whatever passed for normal. Guild thugs and Church of Simon devotees patrolled the streets looking for dissent to stamp out, but they found very little. Most of the people were already back at work, and the suicide rate had almost levelled out. The call had gone out for the renegade undeads whose capture was demanded by the great god Simon himself. An absurd bounty had been posted, and several competing mobs of thugs and adventurers were on the loose, challenging everyone they could find with the slightest hint of pale skin and body odour. I could hear their booted feet tramping back and forth along the streets. Fortunately, none of them had thus far had the presence of mind to search the dumpster where I had spent the last day or so. I'd pulled the lid down tightly and settled myself among a few bags of rotten leftovers, but it was impossible to relax. My hopes for getting myself deleted were dust. My only lead in my pursuit of the deleters had vowed to destroy me, then been evaporated. The rest of my allies were missing, and anyway, most of them were about as reliable as a rice paper suspension bridge. I couldn't even see the deleter communication anymore. I'd visualized badges to the point of nausea, but hadn't squeezed out so much as a single apostrophe. "Where have you gone?" I muttered. "Are you afraid of me now?" "Of course not," said a voice from around the potato peelings. "Slippery John knows, no fear. He does sometimes make strategic retreats. Any stains you might occasionally find on Slippery John's laundry are easily explained away by his terrible stomach infection." I sat up. There was a particularly dark section of the darkness just across from me, and if I squinted, I could make out a stupid moustache. "What the hell are you doing in here?" "Same as you, Slippery John suspects. It's not a great time to be a known magic resistance associate. Slippery John currently embodies a few weeks' fish suppers in the eyes of would-be bounty hunters." "Yeah, they put a bounty on me, too," I said. "Pah!" Droplets of saliva pattered across my face. "Tourist! Slippery John's had more bounties on his head than hats. Slippery John was hiding in dumpsters before you even popped your coffin lid. You picked the fairly obvious one. Good size, right off a main thoroughfare, near the back door of a restaurant. Slippery John's hidden out in this one 3 times. Lived here for 6 months once. You'd be surprised how homey a place gets once you put some wallpaper up." I felt at the walls. "Oh yeah, didn't notice that." "So, picking a topic of conversation completely out of the blue, Slippery John admits he was pretty surprised by your act of filthy underhanded betrayal. Slippery John appreciates that it's natural behaviour for minions of evil. But Slippery John was sort of under the impression that the magic resistance were the key to everything you were looking for, and now they've been utterly destroyed. So maybe you can enlighten Slippery John. What was the plan, dead man?" I was getting a bit sick of getting called out on that by everyone I knew, including my own conscience. "I didn't really think it through," I admitted. Not like it matters. Barry's too powerful now. He conquered the city in an hour. He would have steamrolled right over the resistance no matter what.
If you say so, creature. Slippery John reckons Mr. and Mrs. Sivius being pulled out of hiding and made to walk around in open streets might have sped things up. But Slippery John wouldn't worry if Slippery John were you. Barry can invade all right, but he's got zero public appeal. Wait a few years and he'll probably get voted out before his second term.
I can't really hang on that long without Meryl. She was the only thing holding me together.
You know, that's exactly how Slippery John sees his relationship with Drilda. You probably meant it slightly more literally, though. What did happen to your lady friend?
I left her in the city centre when Barry took over. I didn't even think. He probably blew her into dust or something.
Oh, Slippery John doubts that. Barry's working for the Deleters now, and the Deleters wanted you undead chaps brought to them in an interviewable state. He probably took her to their Nexus thing.
I blinked.
How do you know? Slippery John hung with Barry's crew for a while back in Garethy, remember? And Slippery John nicked some of Sivius's intel. Also Slippery John's natural detective cunning.
He stroked his moustache thoughtfully.
Slippery John is thinking he should have mentioned that last one first.
So where is the Nexus?
That's where Slippery John's natural detective cunning breaks down. Sivius knew, though. You might want to look through his old lab. Slippery John was just heading down there himself to pick up the missus. Want to tag along? We'll rescue Slippery John's damsel, then move on to yours. Fair?
I'm just going to the Nexus to find a Deleter who will erase me, I said firmly.
Fair enough, but if, you know, you happen to be passing, you could rescue Meryl anyway. It'd be the heroic thing to do.
An involuntary twitch ran through my face. I am not a hero, I kept telling her. It's a stupid thing to be.
That's a smart philosophy, he replied. I wished he would get angry at me, rather than just sit there among the bin bags being cheerfully reasonable.
Slippery John knows no fear, of course, but Slippery John could see how it wouldn't appeal these days, with the guild and the syndrome and everything. Slippery John has too much heroism in the blood to do anything else, but it might get a bit too much positive press, if you ask Slippery John.
Right, I said, doubtfully.
Of course, Slippery John reckons there's a difference between hero and protagonist.
I stared at him.
Something clanged heavily against the outside of the dumpster, and we both jumped, scattering food wrappers and used nappies.
Don't panic, said Slippery John. Probably just a womblin'.
There was another clang. It didn't sound much like a womblin', which is a small, urban-adapted cousin to the goblin that feeds on insects and sweet wrappers. It sounded more like, say, the angry fist of a massively built bounty-hunting adventurer, with arm muscles the size of giant sea turtles, smashing against the dumpster as they attempted to figure out how lids work.
"Is it bounty hunters?"
asked Slippery John. "How am I supposed to know?" I hissed.
"Are you bounty hunters?" he yelled.
"Open!" commanded a voice from outside.
It didn't exactly flood me with relief.
"Isn't that your priest friend?"
asked Slippery John.
"Dunno. Sounded like him, but he didn't insult me."
I opened the lid a crack and peered out. It was sometime around mid-afternoon, and the streets were strangely deserted. Thaddeus was still missing his arms, and there seemed to be several dents in his face, which made sense, because he didn't seem to have anything else to bang against the dumpster.
"So you're still around, then?" I said.
"Cower no longer from the light, wretches," he replied. "The streets are near deserted. Barry preaches in the main square to win the hearts of the populace, and his army is occupied with keeping the congregation intact."
There was a long pause. "Aren't you going to call me the putrescent scrotum of a cosmic horror or something?" I said. He blinked, as if mentally filing that one away.
"I have been awakened by the teachings of the Lord, Simon," he announced, while Slippery John and I climbed out of the amassed filth. "So long was I blind to the truth."
"The truth, truth?" I asked.
"No, a different truth. Only the words of the Lord from the mouth of his avatar could have made me come to such a realization."
"That and the whole ripping off arms thing?"
"I am the aberration," he continued solemnly. "I could not see it for my own denial, but now I see that since my resurrection in dark magic, it is I who has been the monstrous, unclean thing in the eyes of God."
He was standing stiff and upright, staring straight ahead. Occasional droplets of the goo we used for blood spurted out of his arm stumps. "Is this going to take long? Slippery John's got a wife to rescue." Thaddeus directed his permanent angry gaze at his own shoes for a few meditative moments before looking up. His eyes blazed as they met mine, and I spontaneously blinked.
"You have known this all along," he said. "You have sought your own deletion from the world since the moment Satan's fiery anus spatters from the realms of the dead. I have returned now to join your quest and finally rub out the black stain that is our mutual existence."
"Incidentally, how did you get away from ba—" I stopped, startled, when he suddenly took a step forward until he and I were chest to chest. Cold black goo ran down my front, joining forces with the dumpster residue to continue ruining my new robe.
"We are both the putrescent scrotum of a cosmic horror," he announced. "We are brothers, jostling together in our thorny sack. I praise the Lord for the removal of my arms, for now I can truly slither upon the ground with you, and with the worms we have always been."
He immediately dropped to the ground and began wriggling back and forth to illustrate his point.
"I am a worm,"
he reiterated, his voice filled with self-loathing.
"Slither, slither."
"Look, will you just stop?" I began. He stopped slithering back and forth and glared up at me.
"Let us journey together to the edge of the world. Let us escort our unworthy bodies to the realms of annihilation."
"The more the merrier," said Slippery John, levering up a manhole. "Were we going to Sivius's lab now, or did you chaps want to make out for a while first?"
The Baron's workshop was still as ransacked as it had been when we left. It had never been tidy, since the ruined cathedral had spent thousands of years gathering dust and bits of fallen ceiling. Mrs. Sivius had clearly made an effort to cheer the place up a bit, but now the potted ferns and throw pillows had been cast aside, buried under broken furniture, and crushed beneath the hooves of gnolls with no appreciation for interior design. Filing cabinets had vomited their drawers, and Sivius's beloved scrolls were pulled from their filing system and scattered randomly over floor and furniture. It was like some stationery-themed ticker tape parade had rolled through the area. I inspected a single random scroll. Unrolled, it would probably go right across the cathedral, and the handwriting was tiny. Sivius was the kind of person who documented his breakfast every morning. "It'll take days to go through all this," I muttered, hand on hip.
"To hasten our disposal, I will make any sacrifice," announced Thaddeus, before flinging himself into the pile to start reading.
I sighed and started searching Mrs. Sivius's old dresser, adding anything vaguely paper-like to the pile on the floor. "I don't see why you think Drill'd'd still be here," I said, poking a broken porcelain milkmaid with my toe. Looks like they took everything that could be of any immediate use.
Slippery John can't be certain, but Slippery John's pretty sure you just called Slippery John's wife a slut.
She's got to be pretty easy if she married you, I pointed out.
Slippery John wouldn't call it easy. Carrying her up and down the aisle was a nightmare. Anyway, look.
Slippery John flung aside a few scrolls to reveal Drilda lying upon the same slab we'd left her on. Most of the ornate, jewelled bits of her armour were missing, though, leaving only a leather bikini and a few pieces of jewellery in places too delicate for meaty Noll paws to go. In a stroke, her look had gone from exotic adventurer to severely lost swimwear model.
Shows how much you know.
I tried to ignore him and made an effort to skim-read the scroll I was holding, but couldn't penetrate Sivius's thick technical wording. Also, Thaddeus was applying himself to his task with such gusto, it seemed a shame to deprive him. I had to face the fact that I was being forced to make conversation.
What will you do now?
Well, not much left for us here in Lowlead, said Slippery John. Perhaps it's time for Slippery John to leave adventuring to the younger folk.
You don't age.
Yes, but now that Slippery John's a married man, settling down seems like the healthy, natural thing to do.
There is nothing healthy or natural about the things you do with that poor woman's corpse.
She's not a corpse. You're probably projecting.
Anyway, what's unhealthy about devoting Slippery John's life to assisting his poor, handicapped spouse?
Slippery John's got it all planned out. We're going to buy a little cottage in the Garethy countryside somewhere, and Slippery John's going to rig up some kind of pulley arrangement in the bedroom.
I shook my head and turned my attention to Sivius's desk. The drawers hadn't been emptied, presumably because Noll fingers were too chunky to work the handle, but so far they had only contained paperclips and dinner receipts. Drilda is dead, I said, as I hunted through knick-knacks. Sivius said as much. She was taken over by a deleter when the syndrome hit her, and I broke the connection they had to her body when I touched her in the dead world. She might still be warm, but however you swing it, she's doornail dead, at least twice over.
Oh, yeah. Then how do you explain that she's moving on her own?
What? The scroll fell from my hands as I saw that Drilda's head had risen from the slab, and she was slowly, mechanically rising to a sitting position like some newly animated abomination of science. Instinctive horror caught in my throat as her head slowly turned to look at me like a clockwork toy.
"Hi," said Drilda.
"Drilda," said Slippery John, overjoyed. "Slippery John knew you'd get better."
"Yes," she said, after a pause. "I am Drilda, a person you know." She swung her legs over the bench and stood up in a single smooth movement, with no apparent stiffness or discomfort from her months of catatonia. She appeared to be surveying the room, despite the fact that her eyeballs were currently sitting in a kidney bowl by her side. My first reaction had been to yelp like a girl and trip over a porcelain shepherdess, but by this point I'd sorted myself out and could commence backing slowly away in a slightly more dignified manner. Thaddeus poked his head out the pile in a burst of pencil shavings and glared at Drilda, hissing threateningly.
"Do you want to see pictures of the cottage Slippery John picked out for us, honey?"
Slippery John fumbled for his back pocket.
"Slippery John," I said, slowly and clearly, "move away from her. Slowly. It is not Drilda."
Slippery John leaned close.
"Smells like Drilda."
"It's a deleter," I urged. "Like Sivius said, she's being controlled by the thing inside her."
"A demon walks among us," hissed Thaddeus from around knee level.
Slippery John rolled his eyes.
"Drilda's dead. Drilda's a demon.
drilled as being controlled by things inside her. Slippery John's getting sick of you picking on his woman.
Oh, wow, said Drilda with zero enthusiasm. She was still wearing her usual slightly condescending look, and like all syndrome victims, carefully enunciated every word like a foreigner reading phonetically from a script. You know we control you. You've become self-aware. I so called this. What do you want? Your gym, said Drilda, swiveling her head to scrutinize me with her empty eye sockets. The undead minion, right? You were speaking to me.
Yes, he pushed you around in a wheelbarrow for a while and did no doubt craven and horrible things to your innocent flower of womanhood. Slippery John seemed to be losing confidence. But it's okay, because Slippery John is here to heal your trauma with his magic touch.
Drilda didn't even glance at him. You spoke to me through world chat.
Through what?
She paused briefly before everything she said, like her personal timeline was a few seconds out of sync with everyone else's. You spoke to me while I was trying to talk to Don, she said, finally. You kept your money in a tin under your mattress.
You? How do you know what he keeps under his mattress? Slippery John looked hurt. And who's this Don character? Do I know him?
That's not Drilda, I clarified, fists clenched. It's the thing I was talking to when I passed out in here earlier.
What thing?
My name's Dub, said Drilda. I'm a developer on the Mogworld project. There was this dickhead we hired, and he took over, and he locked me out of my admin tools, and now he's messing everything up. And he's done something to the security in the building, and I can't get into the office anymore. But I had access to the Drilda account because I was fixing a bug, so here I am. All was silent for a few moments before Slippery John turned to me.
Slippery John thinks you might be right, necrotic swine. Drilda used to say things that made at least vague sense.
It didn't seem dangerous, so I took a cautious step towards the Drilda thing with my hands held out. We have no idea what you're talking about, I said, loudly and slowly. Okay, hang on a second, said the thing that called itself Dub. Then, after a very long pause, it continued speaking in a slightly louder but still expressionless voice. Behold, mortals, I am Dub Us of the Loincloth Pantheon, once a great and mighty creator god, now deposed of my powers by the evil trickster Lord Simon. I am forced to take the form of this mortal warrior to seek your aid.
Well, now we're getting somewhere, said Slippery John. Slippery John knows where he stands with divinely appointed quests. Which temples of the false god do you want us to raid?
Simon truly exists, asked Thaddeus.
Why do you need to ask? I said. You've been worshipping him all day. One look at his terrified eyes told me that I'd missed a point somewhere along the line. It's one thing to believe in a god, and quite another to unquestionably know that he exists, and could at any moment materialize in front of you and start making veiled references to the things he saw you doing last night while reading armor magazines. He's the new guy, said Dub. This game... He paused for a few seconds. This world was mine and Don's. He's the head god. We brought in Simon to help with running things. but Don's away on vacation, and now Simon's taken over. He's ruining everything we set up.
So he's the one helping Barry conquer the world, said Slippery John.
Yes. And he's the one who caused the infusion, I said. The what? The infusion, the thing that stops things from dying or decaying or changing in any way. No, that was me. Drilda's pouting face rotated back and forth between us like a slow metronome. Was that a problem?
Slippery John wouldn't want to tell you how to do your job or anything, said Slippery John. But if by a problem you mean the cause of the endemic misery and unrest in the world today, then you're on the nose there.
But we made you all immortal, said Dub, idly cocking Drilda's hips. I know a lot of people who'd kill for that. Other gods, I mean.
The gods are not immortal,
wailed Thaddeus. His face was aghast. He would have been pulling his hair out if he had hands or hair. So are you the ones who possess adventurers? I asked, feeling a bit dense, considering to whom I was speaking. The ones who cause the syndrome?
Yes, good question, dead man, said Slippery John, waving at Drilda's unsettlingly well-formed body. Slippery John's got another one. When are you going to stop fiddling about inside Slippery John's missus?
There was another long pause. We might be getting a bit off topic, said Dub. Can you delete me? I said. Drilda looked at me. She still wasn't changing her facial expression, but it definitely seemed like the former mighty creator god inside her was losing his grip on the situation. He was like a wolf coming to a flock of sheep to try and raise an army against the lions, and seemed completely unable to fathom why he wasn't having any luck.
What?
I want to be deleted, killed permanently again.
Why?
It's funny how the stupidest questions can be the hardest to answer. I just... well, the infusion is a big part of it, I suppose. And even before then, my life was an unbearable sequence of dashed hopes and pig shit.
Well, even so, this is suicide you're talking about.
A very slight emphasis on the last syllable led me to conclude that there was supposed to be an exclamation mark there. It's not really suicide when you've died once before already. It's more like tidying up.
We beseech thee, O Dub Us, to wipe our foul remnants from the glory of your creation, cried Thaddeus, slithering over to Drilda's feet and getting right to the point of matters, as always.
I can't, said Dub, not until I get my admin, my godly powers back, but I need your help. Drilda pointed stiffly at me like her arm was on the end of a puppet string.
Why?
See, when you pose a question like that to God when he's giving you a divine mission, that's why you're not cut out for the hero business, said Slippery John.
I meant, why me?
How can I word this in terms you'll understand? Said Dub. Your programming is bugged out. And whenever you interact with another program, you cause it to crash.
Do you want to try that again? I suggested, after a round of blank looks.
Okay, hang on. He was silent for a good 30 seconds, his borrowed bosom wobbling rhythmically up and down. Everything in this world is interconnected, right? It's all tied together by this underlying network of, let's call it the Force, and when things happen that we didn't allow for, it causes disturbances in the Force, You saw what happened at Yawnbore. I've been following your progress with the log, with my wondrous powers of omniscience. Yawnbore bugged out because its underlying force became corrupted. That happened when Simon deleted your old fortress. But what about me? I'm getting to that. When Dreadgrave brought you and the others back to life, he did something we didn't expect. He found a loophole in the rules. The world was not laid out with you in mind. There's a corruption inside you that can spread to others. That's what happened when you touched Drilda's interface while you were outside your body.
Yes, what is all this about touching Drilda's interface? Said Slippery John. Slippery John has yet to hear a satisfactory explanation for that one.
So you're saying we, Merrill and Thaddeus and me, because we're undead, we're disturbances in this force?
You certainly disturb Slippery John.
Yes, said Dub, nodding Drilda's head woodenly, and that would normally qualify you for immediate deletion, but right here and right now, it could make you very useful to me. I could feel myself getting deeper and deeper into rather heavy territory. It suddenly occurred to me how much rubbish could have been avoided if I'd just not panicked and run away from the deleters back at Dreadgraves. It was a dizzying thought. I sighed. What do you want me to do? Simon's control of the world rests on a set of thingies that he's put in the... This is going to be pretty hard to explain. Let me think. Another long silence passed. Okay. There's a place in the world from which everything is controlled. The Nexus, right? I interrupted. Where the deleters come from. It's at... Deleters? Oh, you mean the angels? Yes, they come from there. It's at the very top of Mount Murdercruel, where no NPC... Where no puny mortal can possibly reach it alone. There's a sort of machine in the center of it that powers the force. You will have to find a way to spread your corruption to that machine. Then what? Then the server will crash and be forced to reboot without Simon's encryptions. I let his nonsense god language drift through the air for a few seconds before prompting him. And that means? He hesitated for noticeably longer than usual. It means everything will work out. I'll have my powers back and I can grant you whatever you wish. You can delete me, I said.
You can smite us into the blessed void. Echoed Thaddeus.
If that really is what you want.
Could you remove the infusion? Asked Slippery John.
There was another of those longer than usual pauses. I can definitely see what I can do about that.
Can you stop possessing adventurers and using them as sick playthings? Pressed Slippery John.
The next hesitation easily beat the last one. Would it be okay if we kept doing that, actually? That's kind of important to us. Slippery John was flabbergasted.
No, it really wouldn't be okay. Slippery John doesn't really like knowing that Slippery John could have his brain erased and his body taken over by some extraterrestrial git at any time. It doesn't strike Slippery John as the policy of a benevolent bunch of gods.
You know This conversation has really given me a lot to think about, said Dub. I got the impression that somewhere in some distant godly control room he was rubbing whatever passed for his chin. Perhaps we should continue this discussion after you've finished the job. Where did you say the Nexus was? I said. The peak of Mount Murdercruel. A pause. Is there going to be a problem with that? I swallowed. There are going to be quite a few problems with that. Why? I wondered how best to answer his question. Mount Murdercruel was the highest point on the planet. Its peak was said to extend beyond the atmosphere. Everyone who had ever attempted to scale it had disappeared, died, or come back missing a few limbs, and vowing never to try anything that stupid again. Another problem was that Mount Murdercruel was several thousand miles away in the middle of the frozen wastes of the South Polar region, surrounded by iceberg-laden waters that had claimed more sailors than gonorrhea. Finally, I went for, "It's a bit of a way." "No probs," said Dub. "I was able to up Drilda's magic stat before I took her over."
"You put something magic up Drilda?" interpreted Slippery John.
"I can teleport us all to the upper slopes of the mountain," clarified Dub. "It'll get us past most of the hard bits, and I can use aura spells to keep us all from freezing to death." Drilda suddenly dropped into the standard overdramatic syndrome magic casting pose, one hand held aloft channeling magic, and the other thrust out in front of her, feet far enough apart to accommodate an extremely overweight pony, before firing off a stream of complicated postgraduate-level magic words. Thaddeus, Slippery John, and I watched nervously as a spark appeared in the air next to Mrs. Sivius's dresser, spat blue lightning, then spread out into a 3-foot oval. A steady stream of snowflakes flew out and began to melt upon the floor. I'd never used a magic portal before. They were very strictly regulated, following a few incidents involving exit portals inside solid matter and some subsequent ruinous lawsuits. You had to pass extensive written and practical tests before you could get a license, but it was considered a lucrative career option for high-level casters who didn't mind dealing with tourists. "And you promise you'll delete me at the end of all this," I said, as the room's temperature began to drop and my few remaining hairs whipped around my face. "Yes, yes, whatever you want," said Dub, still posing. "You must go now. I can't keep it open for more than an hour or so."
"What about Drilda? Will Slippery John have his beloved back?"
Drilda's blank face cocked sideways quizzically. "What do you want her back for? Her brain's been wiped."
"Yes, well, call Slippery John a romantic, but Slippery John feels there's more to Drilda than just her brain. There's still an essence about her."
"Ugh," I said. "We do not want to know about what kind of essence comes out of your corpse bride." "Hey," said Dub Drilda in a level but very loud voice. "Portal, Nexus, world, saving." I stood before the glittering window. A distant howling wind was drifting over from across the magical border. Sleet was soaking into my robe. I suddenly longed to be back in my dumpster an hour ago, cozy and safe and quiet, and most emphatically not the most hostile terrain on the planet. "Oh, fine," I said. I stepped forward. The moment I entered the portal, I was struck with disorientation. It was like there were three of me at once, one in Sivius's ruined hideout, one standing in a snowy mountain scene, and another that stretched all the way from one to the other, all surrounded by magical white sparks and flashes. It's a strange sensation, feeling that your body simultaneously doesn't exist and extends for thousands of miles, and not a little damaging to the self-esteem. Dub was the only one left in Sivius's lab, still visible as semi-transparent shadows against the glowing lights, confidently stepping towards the portal as he voiced the last few arcane instructions to the spell's navigation system. Then I noticed that one of the little white flashes was, in fact, an airborne butterfly knife, flying across the room and turning end over end. I saw it embed in Drilda's spine, crumpling her legs out from under her, and ejecting the great god Dub to pastures new. Without a conscious caster to keep it stabilized, the portal immediately began to waver. The exit loosened and thrashed about like an unsecured fire hose, hurling us around the void, like children rolling down a hill in a barrel. In the midst of the turmoil, I saw the indistinct figure of Mr. Wonderful walking stiff-leggedly into the lab, watching us with interest. Then I couldn't see the lab anymore. Thaddeus clung to my robe by his teeth, chanting muffled scripture. Slippery John somersaulted by overhead as the blue ether inhaled and spat us out into the unknown. Freezing wind hit me like a frying pan to the face, tearing off a few more loose flaps of skin. My robe fluttered violently around me, losing all its nesting insects in an instant. My feet came into contact with some kind of ground, then immediately slipped off. My chin bounced jarringly off solid rock. I looked up, and for one extremely brief moment, I saw an ice-covered ledge jutting out of a massive black wall of forbidding stone. I didn't have time to take in any further details before friction announced that there was nothing more it could do for me, and I began to slide backwards. I scrabbled in vain for something vaguely holdable. The rock and ice of the mountain had been pummeled into perfect smoothness by millennia of vicious weather cycles. Soon enough I ran out of ledge, and my legs swung into empty air in a swarm of disturbed snow. Time seemed to slow down. This tends to happen in dangerous situations to help the brain think of an escape route, but at that point all I could think of was cartwheeling in slow motion down the mountain, bouncing off every jagged rock along the way, until my finely sandpapered torso finally came to rest in the middle of a snowdrift that I would have to call home for the next 5 million years. I was so engrossed by this thought that it took me several moments to notice that I wasn't falling. Something was holding on to my arm, gripping it fiercely like an extremely poorly fitting wristwatch. Said Thaddeus, my wrist between his teeth. A long pause followed, aptly filled by the roaring wind. "Are you going to pull me up, then?" I said. He shook his head and grumbled at length, his eyes darting around madly. I tried to clench my free hand. It wouldn't move either. My fingers were a useless bundle of rock-hard blue twigs on the end of my arm. The freezing cold temperatures had made all our undead joints seize up.
"Slippery John saves the day again," said Slippery John, whose face suddenly moved into view above the ledge. His voice was confident, but his blue-cheeked grin seemed a little forced.
He grabbed Thaddeus around the waist and pulled him backwards with surprising strength. My body slid onto a reassuringly horizontal surface. I made to conjure a fireball, but my fingers were frozen into place and unable to make the mandatory waggles.
"Gather round the portal's after effect," advised Slippery John, warming his hands in the glowing magical smear. Normally Slippery John would suggest sharing bodily warmth, but Slippery John doesn't think you two would contribute much to that. The bare amount of warmth emanating from the portal was just enough to separate Thaddeus's jaws from my arm. Every time I stopped moving one of my muscles for more than a second, it started to freeze in place. The cold at this height could have flash-frozen a lava golem. The phrase, at this height, sparked a few freezing brain cells. Out of some morbid desire to fully acquaint myself with my problems, I shuffled around the magical flame until I was near the edge, then carefully peered down. I very swiftly regretted doing so. We were mesmerizingly high up. Then I realized that what I had thought was snow-covered ground was in fact the cloud layer, and I felt the vertigo scuttle all the way up my body from my feet to my head, digging its prickly claws deep. I turned my back on the drop and looked up. That wasn't helpful either. A slight overhang offered meager shelter, and beyond that a sheer vertical wall of unblemished black rock plunged into the sky for what seemed like infinity. The stars looked thickly clustered, as if they'd had to be shifted around to accommodate Murdercruel's mass. "Something went wrong," I announced, huddling close to the glow again. "We're nowhere near the top." Slippery John's grin was fixed now. Saliva was crystallizing around his gums.
"Cheer up. We can wait till Dub comes back to life."
"No, we can't," I yelled. The wind was deafening. "He didn't finish the spell. It got misaimed. He'll have no idea where we are. We don't know where the hell we are."
"Then we'd better get climbing."
I pointed upwards. "We can't climb this." I pointed a loosely hanging frozen hand at Thaddeus. "He's lost both his arms, and we're all freezing."
"The cold shouldn't be too much of a problem," he said. "Just keep moving around."
Thaddeus immediately started jogging on the spot. I broke into a ragged Charleston. "What about the climb?"
"Slippery John is ahead of the game again."
He wobbled left and right a little before extending his flimsy black sleeves and shaking out a few items that clanged metallically on the ground. Then he immediately re-hunched his shoulders and his arms snapped back around his torso.
"Enchanted crampons."
They were rigid black spikes with leather straps, and little streaks of blue light shone off the reflections. I stared at them for a few thoughtful moments, making no motion to pick them up, then turned to Slippery John. "Why do you have enchanted crampons on you?"
"Pretty standard rogue gear. Slippery John would love to discuss them further, but Slippery John is about to freeze to death."
He made a heroic effort and managed to separate his teeth with an eye-watering crack.
"Nearest church is on another continent. Slippery John's ghost is going to have a bit of a walk after this. This is probably another reason why God wanted you blokes to take care of this."
He had a point. Besides the fact that our muscles went rock solid if we stopped gyrating for a few seconds, the cold wasn't having any lethal effect on me or Thaddeus. But I felt Slippery John was trying to change the subject. "I get that the crampons are standard rogue gear. I just don't get why you brought two sets. Unless you'd planned for..." I stared at him. A few moments passed, silent for the ceaselessly upsetting wind and the tramp-tramp of two undead people jogging on the spot. "Did you plan for this?" I said, finally. Having said that, a few other notions rolled together in my head. "I've been following you on and off since all this began. You're very obviously stupid and incompetent,
but somehow things have ended up going your way, right? His face betrayed nothing but a vacant, slightly baffled smile and a nasty case of frostbite. The heat reserves stored in his moustache were clearly running low. The more I thought about it, the more sense it made. I cocked my head. The deleters only take over the most skilled and noble adventurers. So if you want to survive as an adventurer and avoid the syndrome, you have to put on a facade of incompetence and creepiness when you're secretly a devious little prick who knows exactly what they're doing. And that's you, isn't it? He kept smiling. I noticed that his eyes had glazed over. Investigatively, I tapped him in the forehead. There was a sharp crack. A seam appeared in his face. Then he toppled backwards and fell off the mountain, disappearing from sight in a puff of water vapour.
"We have wasted enough time," said Thaddeus, his face steadfastly gazing upwards, while the rest of his body from the neck down danced madly on the spot.
"Our annihilation awaits."
I took up a set of enchanted crampons and weighed them in my hands. Shall we acclimb? Our progress up the mountain face was swift. Once the enchanted crampons were attached to our feet, all we had to do was touch the spikes to the wall, and gravity shifted 90 degrees, so a devastatingly hard climb became more like walking slowly and carefully across a flat plain while wearing big high heels. Through some patient hand-jiving, I had finally gotten my fingers loose enough to waggle, and I could conjure the odd fireball to abate the cold, although they didn't last long. After the first few 100 yards, I was pretty sure the air had become unbreathable at some point, but that had never been an issue. All in all, Mount Murdercruel's fearsome reputation was taking quite a beating. Thaddeus was slightly ahead of me. He was getting along surprisingly well without arms, only occasionally losing his balance as he walked and face-planting into the rock. So far we had both been climbing in stoic, determined silence, partly because the wind drowned out most sound, partly because I still didn't like him very much. I tried to zone out and concentrate on putting one foot in front of the other, or rather, above the other. It was confusing, but then no one ever employed magic to make life easier to understand. The snow was everywhere. It fluttered about like swarms of little white bees. With my feet on the wall and the rest of my body sticking out like a flagpole, the flakes gathered in my clothing, nostrils, and under my eyelids. After irritably rubbing it out of my face for the third time, I froze, in surprise this time. "Hey!" I called. "Wait a minute!" Thaddeus stopped and glared over his shoulder. The wind and the rock was effectively smoothing the wrinkles out of his face.
"Why do you delay us?" he boomed.
"Look at the snow!" He frowned.
"It has been snowing for some time. This is a mountain top. It is to be expected."
"But where's it coming from?" I could see his mouth begin to form the words, "the clouds," and the rest of his face contort into the usual sneer of patronizing contempt. But then he glanced over my shoulder and realized the same thing I had, that we had been a considerable distance above the clouds from the moment we'd arrived. The wind was harsh, but not harsh enough to be blowing the snow this far up. I glanced up, or straight ahead, and managed to blink the snow out of my eyes for long enough to take a good look. The snow was definitely coming from above, but the night sky was completely clear. The stars shone brightly, weirdly brightly, in fact. They also seemed to be a little more spread out than they'd been from the ledge. This high up in the world, there was a disorienting tang of unreality in the air.
I didn't know what to make of any of it. The snow seemed to be intensifying. The flakes that rushed down towards us were getting bigger. In fact, they were starting